Podcast here with your good friends at the Everyday Nerd Podcast. I'm Luke D. There's Jocelyn over there and our man Marvin right there. And it's your friendly neighborhood Everyday Nerd Podcast. And we're here to talk about Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings. So I know you folks have been watching it. Hopefully you've watched it. And of course, as we preface all our podcasts, spoiler alerts ahead. So if you haven't seen this movie or you're waiting for it to get to Disney Plus, then hold off, wait till you see it, then come back. We'd love to hear your comments about it. Well, it's our turn to comment about it. And of course, I got to do my usual bit about the money end of this movie. Made $75 million in a pandemic situation, more than they expected. So
is that including Labor Day, like Monday, or is that just Friday through Sunday?
It was till Sunday, I think.
Yeah, because I think.
Yeah, you mean the first weekend?
Yeah, I think if they included Monday, it made 90, which is, that's pretty good considering the situation we're in.
Exactly. I got the number from Sunday. That's great. That's on Monday. And I know you probably have all felt the same thing. Now, Marv, Joss and I, we did our very first podcast about Black Panther. And now this movie, we got to admit, is kind of the Asian Black Panther in a sense that there was a lot of pride watching this movie, a lot of Asian pride. You know, a lot of folks really liked this movie. Not just, you know, the Asian community, but the fact that it was a good movie. Let's get that out of the way. This was a good movie, and there was a lot of Asian pride in it. It was pretty consistent. Again, you know, you may get the argument about how some folks feel that, oh, well, it wasn't an authentic Chinese actor, actress, whatever. Just the fact that Disney's made it up to this step is pretty good at this point. Baby steps, folks, because I know it's not like Scarlett Johansson is playing, you know, in this role, in one of these roles type of deal, like how she did with Ghost in the Shell. Anyways, that's another topic entirely. But point being, though, is it's come out that this is like the Asian community's Black Panther movie. And quite honestly, guys, I think that $90 million total, if it was a normal year, I honestly think we would have surpassed that. That number would have been.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking Black Panther numbers. Remember that, Joss?
Oh, yeah.
When we first reported that. Yeah. That was like, whoa. So definitely, for what it is, the pandemic's still going on, folks.
And also to keep in mind, September is not, I mean, I know with COVID makes things different, but September is never a good time to release movies because everyone's back in school. Everyone is working again. No one is making time to watch movies. So the fact that it made this much on Labor Day on such a slow weekend is pretty amazing.
Yeah, pretty much. Joss, your thoughts at this point?
Well, I'm actually happy that it's finally here. You know, we've seen so many trailers of the buildup, the anticipation. You know, I honestly didn't know what Shang-Chi was going to be about, but I'm really into all the martial arts, and I loved all the actors and actresses that are involved with it, you know, in it. So, and also for the fact that, you know, now we're in this progression with Marvel releasing their new phases of movie. So I think to me, whenever it was going to come out, I would still watch it because I'm a huge fan of Marvel. And for it to be, to have an Asian superhero, I loved it. It was in line with how I feel about Marvel movies and the character development. I thought this particular movie was different in a way. It felt really, it felt different. You know, at times I was wondering, wow, I'm still watching a Marvel movie, you know, because it's very mystical, which is, like I said, to me is different. But I liked it. I really did.
And that's what I like about these Marvel movies, because it's not, you know, okay, so, oh God, somebody came out. The guy who directed the new Dune movie, he, like all Hollywood types, they come in and they market their movie by bashing the Marvel movie, saying, oh, these movies are cut and paste. Where if you look at it, this movie is very different from Ant-Man. It's very different from Black Panther. It's very different from Endgame. Yes, they're superheroes and they have the Marvel banner, but I totally disagree that each of these movies have a different identity, and this movie is no different. That's why, you know, I totally agree with your point when you said this felt like a different movie, but I knew this was a Marvel movie. And, you know, that's the strength you know, that's just the strength of the franchise and the brand, where you could tell these diverse stories, but still say, hey, we're still here.
Well, I felt because I'm a big Michelle Yao, right? That's how you say her last name.
Michelle Yao.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of hers. I mean, I love Crouching Tiger and, you know, Hidden Dragon. And I was just going back to, like, when she first started, because I was like, dang, she's still so past, you know, right? But again, it's a Marvel movie, but yet to me, it had that element of the Crouching Tiger. You know, that type of martial arts with them flying. And it, like I said, it felt different. And I like how they incorporated in this movie. Yeah, the character development, I think, was just, it was good. It was really good. I didn't expect the sister. I didn't know, you know, how they were going to develop into this family. And I think what I like about these Marvel movies that are focused on the individual, you know, is that we get such a depth of their beginning stories, their origins, you know, who are the influential people in their lives, how they're affected, and then, you know, how then they also tied in with Wong and, you know, from the other Marvel movies. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Hey. So again, it was a reminder that, you know what, this is now tied in. And, you know, when he said, okay, you're part of the circus now, to me, it's like, yeah, this is cool.
And, you know, I want to touch in on what Lou said earlier, how this was basically our Black Panther. And I don't mean that just the representation, because there's clearly themes that resonate with us more than the average moviegoer. Just like how, you know, we enjoyed Black Panther, but I'm pretty sure that movie hit a chord more with Black America, or more the view, you know, of African descent. There's clearly more things in Shang-Chi. You know, we're not Chinese, but as Asians, there's things in there we identify with. I think it's just little things, especially when you see, what's Awkwafina's character's name?
No, it's not Nora. Nora's real name. Hold on.
But there's that scene where she's having breakfast with her family. And the little things where the elders, they understand English, but they don't speak it. And also what they eat, they're not eating the traditional American breakfast. Yeah. I think they're eating congee. And you're just like, you know, that is what Asian people would eat.
Or they're like, so when are you going to get married? You know,
it's like, there's a lot of Asian experience that's clearly represented. Like, oh yeah, that's us.
So you're aiming to be a valet attendant, you know, just that career, like you're supposed to be a doctor kind of thing.
And I'm pretty sure we're going to go deeper into it more, but it's there's a lot that, you know, that we as Asians identify a lot with this movie.
Yeah,
definitely. And you guys all touched on it. Joss, you touched on the whole Crouching Tiger, the scene where you first see the battle between what would eventually be the father and mother of Shang-Chi.
Oh, yeah.
Those are elements straight from Crouching Tiger. If you looked at that fight,
you know what I loved about that scene? It wasn't just a scene about beating each other up. It was clearly a scene of, you kind of tell that, oh, who is this girl? I kind of like her. While they're throwing punches, you're like, what? And you know, that's why I like these fight, you know, it's cool to sometimes see these fight scenes, but when you're telling a certain story with the fight scenes, that's what sometimes is missed, you know, what people don't see sometimes, like the background story of what these fight scenes are trying to say. So when you have that scene, you're like, oh, he's beginning to fall for her. He doesn't know who she is, but he's like,
well, that's because she you know, she can kick his butt. She's the only one who ever stood up against
that
him.
That fight scene
and can put him back, you know, like,
challenges. It tells so many things about it. Like, on top of, like, oh, I found somebody who can match me, but at the same time, it's like, oh, I wonder.
She was also a guardian. She was also the guardian, or like the gatekeeper.
Yeah.
To, you know, to their world.
And let's not overlook the fact that we're all saying it, she's a female. She is a female who withstood a guy who basically dominated for years. Suddenly, somebody's living up to his standard and even beating him. And again, of course, it was only natural for him to fall in love with her, because it's like, wow, I've never encountered anybody who could live up to my abilities, who could live up to my standards, who could go par to par with me and even better. So I think, yeah, it, you could totally see. And that's, you know, Marvin touched on it. What's great about the fight scene, you see the, it's not just a fight scene. It's not like guys are coming in, breaking limbs and all this. No, there's a whole development. There's a story being done within the fight scene, which is great. We start out the movie. It's kind of like, you know, like Josh said, I was kind of taking it like, okay, I'm here for the ride. Talk to me. Let's go. And what's great about it is obviously a lot of the scenes were filmed here in San Francisco. Muni did not want their logo on it. So, okay, that's fine.
Really? I didn't notice that.
Muni did not want their logo used, as well as Recology. I don't know why these two companies. Okay, you're lost, but all right. They didn't want their image and likeness. Well, I mean, the bus, we all knew it was a Muni.
We all knew that was Muni.
Yeah, because we're all from here anyway.
Right.
And what's great about it is, I can honestly
say, why would you not your branding in a Marvel movie?
I don't know. And like,
maybe it triggers past accidents.
You know what? I think the statement was Muni didn't want, you know, to be associated with violence, which is kind of funny. But anyways, that being said, what I also like is, yes, since the three of us can confirm this, the film was filmed in San Francisco, not Vancouver. Okay, none of that bit. Where, yeah, like in Kung Fu, that neighborhood does not exist, Joss. I live here in the city. That is not the Richmond district.
No, I know.
But point being is, you know, being, again, a lot of pride coming in, not only the Asian facet of it, but the pride of, hey, they're filming here in my city. This is cool. So, you know, you're watching this movie and you're seeing the development of it. And then you could kind of figure out stuff like, okay, well, he's probably hiding his powers or whatever. And then it's great, the relationship he has with, you know, the character that Awkwafina's playing, Shang-Chi's, and, you know, they are really friends. You know, now let me ask you guys, you two, this. Do you like the concept that they're just friends, or did you want like a little romance in?
Oh, I totally dug that they're just friends, because, okay, you know, it's, yeah, the love interest trope can get a little played out. I mean, mm-hmm, yeah, they kind of hinted something, and I was kind of hoping they did it. Because, mm-hmm, you know, there are times when you just need a friend. You don't need to fall in love with somebody in order, yeah, to find your true self. It's just good to just have somebody who has your back. And, mm-hmm, you know, that was exactly something I talked to my sister about, because me and her were talking about, we appreciated that they're so far that their relationship is purely platonic at this point.
Okay. Joss?
You know, I did like, I like the fact that, you know, that they're homies, you know, that,
yeah, exactly,
you know, they're buddies and stuff like that. But yeah, there were some points that it's like, wow, mm-hmm, could there be? And then it made me think about like in the future, you know, but again, the love that you have for a friend can be just as deep as a love you have romantically with someone. And you, mm-hmm, could tell, you know, like during those times where her life was on the line, you, yeah, know, I mean, he really went out to protect her. And it's a very deep kind of love, but maybe it's even sisterly, you know, like maybe sibling. Yeah. Like,
that's how I viewed it.
You know, that they're kind of brother and sister. And it's just funny when the grandmother would say, when are you going to marry my granddaughter or something? But
yeah, you that's know. Typical. That's typical, because honestly, guys, you would agree, if you have a opposite sex friend keeps coming over, your parents of that generation think there's something going on, right? Exactly. They automatically say,
we're doing that right now with my niece. We're just like, what's going on with you guys? They're like, we're friends. I'm like, mm-hmm. Like I said, going back to themes that we understand,
right?
I'm, yeah, pretty sure this is more of a universal one, but, you know, especially for us as Asians, that is something we go through a lot.
Exactly. Right. See, so what I liked, again, like you guys mentioned, the fact that I did like the fact that it just stayed platonic, stayed a friendship, which is really great. So what's interesting about this, so, you know, again, we won't do our usual how we would go from beginning to end, but obviously we mentioned Muni and the bus scene, which was really,
oh, that was awesome. Now, you know, I have a question. Yeah. Just real quick, as that scene was progressing, did that bus scene movie remind you of another movie?
Are you talking about Speed? Did.
Yep. It totally reminded me of Speed and Sandra Bullock, and you know
going back to what these fight scenes are telling a story. This was another one where you're, you know, like I said, this is more of a, we're, you know, we are clearly Awkwafina in this. She is the audience. We're like, wait, what is going on? Who are you?
Oh, that was hilarious.
So we're all figuring out, like, wait, so what's going on? What, you know, we've known you this long and you haven't told us that you could do this. What's going on?
Well, it was funny because she said he can't fight, but he was trying to hide it for as long as he could. Mm-hmm. But then when that guy just like pushed her face down and he saw that you're hurting my friend, he was like,
and then the moment he did that pose like that,
that was cool.
And you're like, oh, you'll go get it. Comes.
Yeah.
You mentioned another movie, you know, being Speed. Did you also get a feel? He was wearing a jacket, then he was using the jacket. What other Chinese actor does
that? Oh, Jackie Chan. I felt Jackie Chan too.
That was actually a tribute to Jackie. A lot of the jacket movement and things like that. Yeah. So you catch a lot of this stuff there, which was really great. And it was a great fight scene. Excellent fight scene. And you kind of see the skills that he does possess. You know, initially you're like, well, can this guy really fight? You know, how good is he really? And obviously you see the skills, which is great. So obviously what happens here is his jade pendant gets stolen. So he knows he has to get it back, and he receives a postcard from his sister that he hasn't heard from in years. So he figures, well, I got to find her, you know, let's go find her. He goes to the address that's on the postcard and shows up at the place. And it turns out that it's a fight club. And let's see if you guys, how smart you guys were. When they walked in, it was great how he signed a contract. He didn't know he was signing that he's going to fight. He walks in, and there are all these other fights, these prelim fights the guy was saying. Oh, this is nothing. These are prelims. Did anybody catch any participants in the prelims?
Just I caught an Extremis soldier from Iron Man 3. I didn't catch it, but
I caught a Black Widow.
Yeah.
I saw a Black Widow in there. Yes. And then the guy who was saying, hey, this is the club, he's from Crazy Rich Asian. I picked that up. And then,
I haven't seen that yet.
For reals?
Yeah, I know.
Okay, well.
And you're not.
I know.
Okay, right. Well, anyways, but he was like, yes, but no, I, you know, it was actually for them to, first of all, let me just back up. The fact that, you know, it was hella funny, it was so funny, was that the revelation that Awkwafina had, I want to keep calling her Nora, but that's her real name. But, you know, the fact that I was like, wait a minute, you're on a plane and you're telling your life story, you know, of all this. And I'm like, wonder who, people out in the plane, aren't they going to hear your conversation? You know, would they hear all this, what was happening? I thought that was like interesting, but then she just like laughed at him because there wasn't much of a name difference between Chinese name and his real name, you know. Yeah. And I just think also just with Awkwafina, you know, when she was riding that bus, I mean, her humor, I mean, I like her humor anyway.
Her name is Katie.
Thank you. Thank you. But yeah, you know, so Katie, you know, just the way she like I said, she was fun. She was a fun element to this. And I really liked it in those little scenes that, you know, she presented and that she talked about. And I know we're talking about them as friends, but you can really feel that, hey, you know, she's just excited to go on this journey with him because he was like, okay, I've got to leave. I've got to go. And she's like, no, I'm going with you. And so
I got to learn more about
you. You know, I think she served the roles of in a way, she's kind of like the avatar of the audience. You know, you watch a lot of movies that, you know, they're experiencing things for the first time. Like if you watch the first Men in Black, we are clearly Will Smith. He's discovering this world. So in this one, we are Awkwafina because she is discovering this world.
Katie.
We're clearly going through the journey with her because she's finding things out, you know, at the same time we are.
Right.
So that, you know, that was good to have her as that, you know, serve that role.
Yeah, go ahead, Lou.
You know, the thing is, we forgot one little scene, and it's also reflective on not only Asian culture, but just culture in general. Look, Katie, thank you. Katie and Shang-Chi are with an old friend, and the old friend is basically telling them, what are you guys doing? What are you guys doing with your lives?
Like,
you guys, is that what you really want to do for the rest of your lives?
Oh, my God. Those sounds like conversations I've had many times.
Exactly. And I'm sure folks that are watching this podcast or listen to it right now go, yeah, I've had that with my friends. And, you know, here's my thing. A lot of folks, it's not at you know, most people have their plan. Like at 25, I get married. At 30, I have a kid. You know, it doesn't work out that way.
No, and it doesn't. What
I kind of appreciate about the scene was the fact that I think everybody has gone through that, where they have the friend who's, I guess, successful or is living her plan.
For a lot of people, it's an elder in your family.
Yeah, or, and I get it, you're kind of concerned about your friends. You're like, dudes, you guys really want to do that the rest of your life? I get that part. But what's interesting is that I think everybody has experienced that. See, so that's what I kind of want to mention before we jump back into the Fight Club, which is interesting because here's a prime example. Again, folks, if you're seeing trailers of Marvel movies, here is where Marvel likes to fake you. Because there was a big, huge write-up about how, wow, he's going to go up against Abomination from the Hulk movie. Didn't you see it at the end of the trailer? Well, guess what? He didn't go up against Abomination. And oddly enough, Marv, correct me if I'm wrong, that was an Abomination, right? Am I correct on that? That is him. Okay.
They even got the original actor to come back, if only just to record his grunts.
So nice. I'll be honest, I didn't know who Abomination was.
He was from the Hulk. You at least watched the Edward Norton Hulk, right?
Yeah,
never saw it.
Okay, well, I mean, but what's interesting about it, Marv, is the fact that everybody was saying, oh wow, Shang-Chi's gonna, but then, and what was cool about it, because really the surprise was who was taking on Abomination. It was Wong.
So
that was great. That, because all says, oh hey, Wong's here. And yeah, Josh, that was my reaction. Oh, cool. Wong's in the house. All right. You know, and I like the fact that we're seeing Wong like doing more stuff besides just being, okay, you know, Dr. Strange just hanging out, whatever.
Being expository, giving the exposition.
Exactly. Doing stuff. And what's cool about it, you know, you see the relationship he has when he's taking on Abomination at the end in the locker room. Which
I kind of want more of that. Like, okay, you know, it's because they're clearly like throwing fights and, you know, they're not as adversarial as people. It's kind of like professional wrestling. They're fighting, but in backstage, they're friends, and they're like, "Yeah, let's do this, let's do that."
It's not kayfabe, you know. They didn't.
Yeah.
So there you go. But anyway, so the real person that Shang-Chi ends up fighting, we all figured it out right there. Oh wow, well this must be his sister. And through the beginning stuff, you saw how his sister started just doing it on her own. Was training on her own. And that is a key element we're going to discuss, obviously, later. How she became as good as she was, a fighter as she was, on her own. Well, there's a big
hint. This is also going back to some of the themes resonate, but I think also this resonates also just in culture in general, how females feel like, you know, they're not taken seriously. So you know what? They're gonna make their own moves, and because you know, opportunity isn't gonna come their way, so they're gonna make their opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's what I totally appreciate about her journey. That she was like, you know what, my family neglected me. They were all concentrated on Shang-Chi. So you know what? I'm gonna do my own thing. And especially later on, as we find out when we talk about her making her own opportunities.
Yeah,
she does. Yeah, that's what she's all about.
But I mean, it's kind of fun because, you know, it's like a family reunion in the way that you just did not expect. So,
yeah,
you know, that was pretty fun.
We'll definitely touch base on that later on. But obviously, there's a, you know, it's obvious that Shang-Chi was set up to find his sister by their father. It was obvious their father was looking for both of them because he wanted the jade necklaces that their mother gave to both kids. And so here comes all the 10 ring soldiers come in. And of course, you know, they're breaking out of the club. And of course, if we want to do tributes to movies again, it totally reminded me before anybody even pointed it out, when they were outside the club, I go, wow, that looks like Rush Hour 2. I just said it. And then sure enough, everybody, yeah, it was Rush Hour 2. Okay, well, made sense. And so it was kind of cool. You know, a little tribute, kind of, and they, you know, modernized it, got a, you know, different things going on there. But obviously, they end up getting captured and they end up going back to. Now, here's the thing. What do we call him? The Mandarin? What do we call him, Marv?
Well, before I go to that, let me talk about Tony Leung first. I totally appreciate that he didn't play this as a bwahaha villain. I want to control everything. It's, and this isn't a knock on his performance. I think it's actually a plus that, you know, for the quote unquote villain, he's actually a very gentle soul. You know, like I said, it's not like he isn't scary, but you can clearly see that some of the, especially when he meets his wife, that his focus has changed. So he's not all about control anymore. And it's, and then, you know, as story, you know, as you find out that, you know, it wasn't until he lost his wife that he started to drift back. So I don't look at him as a totally evil person, maybe misguided in his actions, you know, and like I said, you understand why he's doing it. And like I said, I like that he wasn't a totally bad person. He's just, like I said, he's quite possibly like one of the more relatable villains that Marvel has had. But going back to what his name is, his name was Wen Wuen, and he goes into the diatribe about the name the Mandarin. He's like,
he
created this organization. What do they call me? They name me after a fruit.
Yeah.
Okay. So I loved it. I loved how, because it was obvious that a lot of folks that saw Iron Man 3 were very, very disappointed when they found out the who the Mandarin was. And we're going to touch on that later. But what's great about the scene where he's there with his children, he goes, oh, yeah, and a few years ago, you know, I've toppled governments and even the U.S., a media mogul comes to me and he makes this. And like you said, named after a fruit and this is that. And they got some guy. And what's interesting about that, and we talked about this, Marv, it plays into the little Disney, the Marvel short.
Oh, yeah.
About Trevor, who played the Mandarin this whole time. And so you
And I also like how they took him and then he became part of this movie. But he's still in his, like, this is a performance I'm under.
Yeah. Oh, my God, I love Ben Kingsley.
He's always thinking there's a performance that he's doing at the moment.
Thespian.
Right,
thespian.
And so he's just carried that character, and it's just so funny.
The guy that played Gandhi would be too good to play kind of role. But then you see it, you could tell that he's enjoying playing this character. And as he said, he's like, I like this character. And then he actually said, I'm happy to come back to and do this character. I'm happy you guys called me. So to see him in, you know, my initial thought when I found out he was in the movie, I was like, oh, they're going to kill him in like the first 2 minutes. But the fact that they kept him around. And
why did they keep him around?
To basically be their entertainment. You want to be the jester. You want to be a part of the Ten Rings? Here you go. Yeah. You are the jester. The
court jester.
It's pretty funny. It was pretty funny. But you know, also the fact that you know, after that big fight scene that they had, and then you know, it's a way to get his kids' attention. Is to have a fight with them, and they're, you know, in that building on the scaffold, and then when Shang-Chi and one of his top guys are battling, he said, you know, you're not going to beat him, meaning his son. There's no way you're going to be able to beat him, but to know that they just went through it anyway. He's like, hi kids, let's go home, and they all get into the helicopter together, and it's like, here we are.
Yeah, so I liked how that relationship wasn't like. It wasn't like, oh my God, we're going to die. It's more like, I gotta hang out with my father and listen to him.
Obligatory family time. I see that a lot. Again, with kids.
I think that's an Asian thing too, right?
Obligatory family time. The fact
that, hey, dad is calling you. It's like, as much as you hate him or hate the situation, somehow within our culture, we're like, okay, it's dad. Let's, you know, what's he want now? Okay, you know,
I'm sorry, I'm going to do my worst Vin Diesel impression, but what's this movie about?
Pretty much. And that's something we'll discuss here. This movie has so many Asian themes to it and regular themes too. So we're touching on how now they're back with their father and everything. And again, like I said, that scene where he's talking about himself, how he's many names, and it kind of just a little Marv, I know how much you love Loki. just a little bit mentioned the whole "I'm many names" thing. Oh, here we go with the many names thing again. but just the fact that when he mentioned, you know, to me, for all the folks, again, like I said, all the folks who hated Iron Man 3, and rest his soul,
our man DJ GOC
hated the fact of what they did to the Mandarin. I think what he said in the conversation with his kids and eventually seeing Trevor later, to me, made up for it. It's like, okay, all right. Well, I'm not gonna stress over the fact that the Mandarin wasn't the quote unquote Mandarin I'm used to.
But you know? I think it's to like, be fair, okay, to talk quickly about Iron Man 3, if they had casted an Asian actor to play a character named the Mandarin, you know, okay, maybe that would have worked in the 60s, but in the 2000s, that's like, that's like naming a, let's say you have a Filipino character and his name is the Ilocano. And you're just like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
I think in a way, just doing, like, I never had a problem. Yeah, it's like, yeah, I wish Mandarin was like this badass villain, but at the same time, just knowing what the origins of that character is and all that, you're like, wait, it's, you know what, I think this was the best route to go. That's me personally. I know people hated that movie and I get it, but
I didn't like Iron Man 3.
Exactly.
I liked it, rest in peace
our man DJ GOC hated it. He hated the fact of what they did to the man.
You know what? I'm going to watch it again and be like, you know, this movie is not bad.
I wasn't into the whole Pepper Potts thing.
I've come to appreciate a little bit, but anyway, let's get back to this one here.
This is the movie we're talking about.
So Trevor, you know, we see Trevor and he's there with a creature, which was kind of cool. With no face.
Oh, yes, that's right.
I want to find a Morris.
I don't know how to feel about that creature that had no face. I'm like, dog, pig, what is that, wings?
It's like a turkey, a little turkey-ish, a little, you know.
He's like, hello, my friend.
That's actually, quote unquote, real Chinese mythological creature.
And that's what I want to tell you guys. That's what I want to tell you.
Is it really?
The fact that Maurice, or is it Morris? Morris, and then when we get into, oh God, help me out, guys. Where did they go to?
Talo, something like
that? Yeah, when they went there, all the creatures you saw, including the dragons.
That was cool, though.
You know, the phoenixes and all that were all Chinese mythical characters, which is what I really appreciated.
That's why I felt it was a different kind of movie. But then again, I'm thinking about, okay, you know, like, we've got, like, say, Thor, or, you know, these other thing that goes to, like, aliens. And so we've seen different, but I don't know. This one was just, it was mystical. Maybe because the way they described it is, like, you know, when they go into their land, they were saying, you know, when people fight, their martial arts or their fighting style is like they're fighting like their gods, you know. And so I had that, like, I bought into that. So, you know, when they actually went into and to see those kind of creatures and stuff, that was pretty cool.
It was. And like I said, I really think they did it right where you have these mythical creatures and they talk about it. You could ask, you know, a lot of folks that are, that have knowledge to all the Chinese mythical creatures. They'll tell you, oh, that was this, that was that. And it's really cool. I liked how they went authentic about it, you know, more as authentic as you can be, right, to an audience. You know, you're not putting it in somebody's face. You know, that's what I liked about it. You're not putting it that this is a blank and this is what it does or this is what it did. No, it's just there. And if you have an interest, oh yeah, you know, I want to know that one character, the lion looking character, is there something about that, you know? And then you find out that, oh wow, it's this, it's that, and then obviously the dragons and this, that. So again, Marvin is our guy, and I think we're gonna get confirmation on this. Everybody was saying, oh wow, Fing Fang Foom is in.
I don't think that's Fing Fang Foom, because one, I think Fing Fang Foom is a lot larger. He's basically the big dragon in the Marvel comics.
Oh, you mean at the when it comes out of the water?
Yeah, they thought that dragon at the end was Fing Fang Foom. One, he's larger. Two, Fing Fang Foom is a, I mean, he's not a good monster.
Well, yeah, I have to say though, when the dragon did come out of the water, and then he like again, it's another reference when Shang-Chi was on him, they were flying. I felt like I was watching part of Never Ending Story. Yeah.
Never. But yeah. The director and some of the actors, they confirmed that's not Fin Fang Foom.
Okay. Just
I didn't know he had a name.
Going to our comic expert, just wanted confirmation from you, Maureen. Okay, and so. We have the big battle, the army of the Ten Rings taking on the soldiers that are there right now. And it was a pretty good battle. Then all of a sudden, because their father was fooled into thinking their mother was behind that, I guess, what would it be called?
It's because that was behind it.
Yeah, what is that called?
I forgot what the actual thing was. But the voices, he was hallucinating.
He's hearing her voice.
Those are voices that he just kept hearing that made him, you know, hallucinate. And that's where he was, he was misguided. But because of his desperation and his grief, he wanted it to be real.
This is the second time we've covered grief. WandaVision.
Her grief like created that whole town, WandaVision. Well, with him, his grief unleashed that beast.
Marvin touched on it. He wasn't per se a villain, a bad guy at that point. You know, we see the introduction of his character, how he ruled for thousands of years. But at that point, you had to sympathize like, wow, he's hearing his wife. So he wants to save his wife. He's willing to do whatever it takes.
I think it's kind of sad that because he's so concerned about trying to bring back somebody who's dead, that he's forgetting his family members that are alive.
Exactly.
And I think that's kind of sad. Yeah. It's just like, but your kids are here. You know, I remember I was reading a quote. The director was talking to Tony Leung, and they like to have their deep dive with the characters, to find that motivation. So the director asked Tony Leung, does Wen Wu love his children? And Tony Leung said he does, but he just doesn't know how to love them.
I agree with that. Well, he's growing up. He did show pieces of it. And I believe it's because of his wife's influence. His wife was a role model to show what that was about, but then when she was taken away, he didn't have, because you had them on the couch together, you know.
It's funny how I talked about he wasn't scary, but the moment after his wife was murdered and he goes into that bar to confront the people was the moment we're like, okay,
better get out of the way.
Yeah.
But let me ask you guys this though. Didn't he blame Shang-Chi for not doing anything when his wife was killed?
It was outright, but you know, he definitely put some of that responsibility. And you know
But it was also irrational because he was just a little boy.
Yeah.
It was irrational. He was scapegoating. He was scapegoating because he really blamed himself for not wearing the rings and not being, you know, tuned to this happening.
But also just not admitting the fact that who he was and the people he attracted, that is what caused his wife to die. Right. It was the people that he angered when he was on his quest for power. So, you know, going back to more themes. I love my parents, but sometimes I think parents in general, sometimes they sometimes have a hard time admitting that something is their fault. And it's easier, you know, like I said, they like to pass the buck on other people instead of like saying, you know what, maybe I had a part in this. So,
hey, Marv, I think you hit that on the head because quite honestly, I can only speak from my own experience. I can never be honest, picture my dad saying that he was sorry or made a mistake
or humble,
you know, he'd be quiet about it. Yeah. He would try to make it up in other ways, but you would not hear those words that it was on me. I'm sorry. I made the mistake. No, you would not hear that. Now, again, we talked about how this could be a cultural thing. And I kind of believe that that's why this kind of hit home for three of us here, that a lot of it dealt with family. A lot of it dealt with culture. all the elements that we have, all three of us have personally grown up in. Now, the folks that are watching this podcast or listening to it, or if you don't know what we're talking about, well, hey, you know, I'm not trying to say you're out or anything, but just do understand that within our culture, the Asian culture, family is a big thing. And there are certain elements of family that doesn't mean it's great, it's perfect. No, there's, and it showed in this movie, there are elements of family that are great, but then there are elements that aren't so great. Elements that would just say, well, wow, why can't he just admit he made the mistake? Or,
well, why can't he do that? Pride. You know, mm-hmm. there's exactly. a sense of there's a lot of pride that takes place. And I think in this culture, and especially in an American culture, in the way, mm-hmm. You know, now we're, it's like, okay, you know, was it generational sins where, you know, you don't deal with it and you're not showing accountability. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot that doesn't happen. But when I think in American culture, it's kind of taught that, you know, you need to be accountable.
Exactly.
For that.
Well, you know, I think some of the, maybe some of the older generations, they sometimes have a hard time when they're over here, when they see the American way of life and some of the lessons that, you know, especially us that grew up in, you know, in the country, they sometimes have a hard time. Like, why can't you just see things our way? I'm like, well, we grew up in different cultures, different.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So
exactly. And it's different generations too.
Different generations, different value mm-hmm. system.
Okay. Well, that being said, the battle between Shang-Chi and his father, he earned, you know, his father realized he earned the rights to get the rings.
But that battle was good though. Yeah. That was a great battle.
And again, I think that was his way. That was his way of not saying, I'm sorry, or it's on me. No, he gave him the rings. He said, okay, this is my way of showing to you that it was my bad. Or, yeah, I guess I take responsibility.
Or like, I totally missed up. I see. I was mm-hmm. so concentrated on what was there that I forgot what was there.
Yeah. So that's.
But it was cool, though, the fact that when he had the rings, the father had the ring, they were blue. But when they passed on to Shang-Chi, they turned gold. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it had to do, I don't know what that color change was about, but it was pretty dang cool. And also, I was kind of wondering, was he trying to get the rings off of his father? Or, you know, or even like, I think they were trying to fight. He was trying to fight to like make sense to stop his father from opening.
Yeah, I think he was trying to remove his rings, not to take control of them, just to say, stop what you're doing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's what I think. And I think Joss, honestly, there is something to the color scheme of blue and gold. I mean, look at his outfit. And
now I remember, because at the very end, they said, you know, when you got those rings, it actually then started a beacon. So maybe when
it's crazy.
We got to jump. We got to move forward. Okay? But seriously, when you went from blue to gold, that's when that whole thing that you talked about, hey,
we're almost there.
Sorry.
I know you're excited, and I know we got to wrap this up. So
no, but it clicked. Something clicked.
Yeah, exactly. And it's something we are going to discuss real quick. And the fact that, you know, the battle ended, it was a great, and both forces joined together, the Ten Rings, as well as the Guardians, they all joined together to battle against.
Let's talk about, though, Katie.
Yeah, Katie with the arrow. You just knew she was going to hit the mark, right?
You know what's funny? In any other instance, I would be annoyed. We're like, oh, of course, the one time she
threw one the time. Arrow,
you know, but.
Beginner's luck.
And yet, I don't know why. I had no problem with this one.
Exactly.
I don't know
why. Well, you know, also, there was a lesson because, you know, she's always like, whatever. And then here now, it's like the fight that she didn't ask for, but now she's involved in and she's now invested. And mm-hmm. she's being taught a lesson, you know, when it comes to not just, you know, this battle, but like in archery, in life, exactly. You aim at nothing, mm-hmm. you get nothing.
That was the quote. I was looking up. Like, what was the quote? Yeah. What was that awesome quote? You aim at nothing, you get nothing. You get nothing. Okay, that was it.
Because she was like, what's the point of all this? But that really hit home to her. That was cool.
Exactly. So movie ends, you know, basically he accepts who he is. Yeah, so he accepts his destiny. He has the Ten Rings. So now he's Shang-Chi and has the Ten Rings now. So the movie ends. And of course, The one thing that Marvin and Jesse and myself cannot stand is people getting up and leaving when they first see the first credits come on.
It's you like, had 20 plus movies to condition you about this. Like, don't you know already?
I go, look, this isn't Endgame. Okay, Endgame, I get it. You were there for so long that you had to go to the bathroom. I get it. And Endgame did not have a post-credit scene. I get that. But come on. Like Marv said, how many years have you know there's a post-credit? At least see the mid-credits.
And then they always complain. We're like, oh, I didn't see it. Wait. Like, yeah, exactly. You got up.
It's like,
oh, you're damn full.
You left. So mid-credit scene, Joss talked about it, where Wong comes in and takes them.
It's so funny. The setup is so funny because now they're back with those two friends of theirs, and they're like, we did this.
The same one that scolded them going, you guys have no direction.
And now they're looking at them like,
what the hell?
They're crazy. Exactly. They're showing their friend that, hey, we now know our purpose in life. And now the friend is questioning it. Like, wait.
And then next thing you know.
Yeah, here comes Wong. That was great. That was
awesome. Hey, come on. We got to go.
We got to go. So then the mid-credit scene is they're hanging out with Wong. And from Endgame, you see two silhouettes. Or not silhouettes. Two
holograms.
Those holograms. It's their virtual reality.
Yeah. FaceTime. Two holograms. One of the Hulk who, by the way, or Bruce Banner, still in a sling. Arm still in sling, and DJ GOC's favorite character, Captain Marvel.
You mean that sarcastically, or did
he hated Captain Marvel?
He hated her.
I'll ask after we're done, but I'm kind of curious why. I'll ask when we're done.
We'll get into that later. But just the point being is that. They asked that, oh, wow, a significant event happened now. Once you got these rings, a significant event happened. Now, if you guys all went to the movie beforehand and saw trailers, I don't know. Marv, correct me if I'm wrong. When you saw the trailer for the Eternals, they mentioned some big moment that happened, right?
Don't say the B word.
That's gathering them together, the Eternals together is a major event.
Okay.
Now here we go. They mentioned there's a major event that's going on. That's why there's something with the rings. And it's interesting how they brought Dr. Banner as well as Captain Marvel. She goes, I've never encountered anything like this. And then Dr. Banner's like, wow, I've never
it's
even
it's not alien them. Tech.
Yeah, it's not
it's
so
not made of vibrations. So they don't know where it came from and what it's made of.
So a lot of speculation that possibly the Eternals can, the movie that's coming out soon, can answer origins of the Ten Rings. You know, where did they first come from? Things like that. So, of course, folks that haven't figured it out and stayed through the music and through the credits, there's one last scene, and it's something we talked about earlier, how Shang-Chi's sister, what's her name, guys?
Xia Ling.
No.
It's funny how Shang-Chi goes, yeah, my sister's taking care of the, you know, that my dad's, you know, Tannerite, you know, the army, she's taking care of it. Well, little does he know, yeah, she is taking care of it. She's owning it.
She is making her own opportunities and taking it.
Exactly.
So then I kind of wonder, like, is it for good? Is it for bad? What is her motivation? What is her motive?
It's that whole gray area. And of course, you all noticed a lot of female warriors in there,
right,
as opposed to before. So again, I like the message that Marvel has been promoting. I mean, I think it was a little in your face in Endgame where, you know, the scene where all
we got female, this.
Yeah, exactly. I think that one was a little in your face because they did it already in Infinity War, but okay, I get it. Now you have all the other females. That's fine. But I like the fact that they're showing, again, that women are just as strong as men and could whoop some butt just like men too. So I liked how that ended. And like you said, Joss, we don't know what's going to happen now with the Army of the
Ten. Yeah, I'm wondering, what is this preparing
for? Are they
going to
just be assassins? Are they going to be good guys? Are they bad guys? Is there a gray area?
Well, I'm pretty sure we will see these characters again in the, well, as you saw after that scene, it said the Ten Rings will return.
Oh, yes, that's right.
In what form? In, will they have their own show? Will there be a Shang-Chi 2? Will they show up in other movies? We don't know. We will find out. Just hang tight.
So, final thoughts on this, guys. I personally loved it. Gotta go with the 9. I'm gonna give it a 9 out of 10, because just a mere fact, and it kind of, you know, I can't speak for you two, but for me it kind of hit home, the family element, the whole, you know, just the whole cultural element. And it was a kick butt movie. I mean, let's just get it real. I mean, the action was legit, and like Joss mentioned, a lot of the fight scenes kind of took it back to the Crouching Tiger style, but that wasn't kind of in your face either. That way, it was just enough to me. It was just believable enough. It's like, okay, all right, they're mysticals. And that's the thing. You guys mentioned it all podcast long about it being mystical. Is this the new phase that we're dealing with coming soon with the mystical arts of a Doctor Strange?
Well, I have to remember Marvel isn't just the Avengers. You know, what I love about them is there's different parts that, you know, they call it, they compare it to a tapestry where each part has their own corner, but they're part of the same tapestry. So we're getting the mystical, and we're going to definitely get more of it with Doctor Strange. But, you know, remember, we still have space, because there's still going to be a Guardians movie. We still have Wakanda. I cannot wait till we get more to the supernatural as soon as we get Blade.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah. So like I said, but also, you know, to touch on the first post credit scene, I know I'm looked at as the comic guru, and yes, while there are a lot of theories, I really don't know where they're going to go with this. It could be many things, but me personally, I like, because, you know, when you saw Thanos, you're like, you know, they're going to do Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah.
But this, you're just like, I wonder which way they're going to go. They can go many directions, but me as somebody who grew up with it, I like not knowing where we're going.
Well, do you think it's gonna hear, but you know, with those, there's always a tie-in together, right? When we watched the first phase, those 10 movies, we knew it was all tied to Thanos. Okay, so we've seen WandaVision, we've seen Captain America, you know, we know that, okay, there's that Agent Ross and the Thunderbirds, and then there's Kang the Conqueror, and then there's, you know, what's, you know, are they tying together?
I think what we're seeing right now, we're seeing a number of cataclysmic events happening at the same time, with Loki, with the time splintering, Wanda basically kind of undid reality, and then Shang-Chi's opening this door. Who knows what's going to happen? Or I don't know if you saw the trailer for Spider-Man No Way Home, but clearly Doctor Strange did something. So I think there's something going on with the fact that, because, you know, everyone is pinpointing, hey, what causes this? What causes that? The fact that all of these events are basically happening at the same time. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be like, that's an issue. Wait, why? It's like, it's one thing if like one bomb blows up somewhere, but the fact that you have so many of them blowing up at the same time, that's going to be like, wait, somebody's, you know,
also,
going.
Right. And also it's kind of interesting, because then with this movie, they said this is 5 years after everyone had disappeared. So it's again, I didn't want to say it, but it's like 5 years after. So it's all kind of like around the same time. You know, where they're capturing and focusing on people is 5 years after. Exactly. So I'm going to be curious with this whole Eternals, because I don't know anything about Eternals.
Mm-hmm. My Eternals knowledge is pretty limited, too.
I don't know anything about it. And so, like you said,
kind of limited. Maybe somebody wants
to. We have a Game of Thrones reunion going on with that movie. So that's kind of cool to see.
Okay.
I totally saw that. I picked up on that. So, but yeah, just guys, I give it a 9. You guys give it a score.
I give it a 9 too, just because, 9? As you said, there's a lot more to this movie that we got, you know, like I said, I'm, you know, as you said, anyone else that watches it, they'll get enjoyment. But clearly, as Asians, there's more to this movie than, you know, what we see. There's other things we see and we catch that resonate more with us. So, as you said, it hit home with all. This movie hit home.
Yeah. Joss?
I don't want to give it a 9 because I didn't feel it was a 9. Maybe an 8.5.
That's fine.
That's fine.
Okay. I don't know if I'm asking for more or anything. It's just
remember what I said in the last show. Just you don't have to look at it the same way I do. Yes, Star Wars fans, calm down.
There were strong points, but I think maybe I wanted more with the dad. Maybe I wanted more. You know, I just think there could be some more development in some other areas, but for the most part, it was good. You know, it was good.
All right.
How would you rank this as an origin story? If you compare, I'm not talking about like the sequels, but like if you compare it to the origin story of, or the origin, like Iron Man 1 is clearly the origin of Iron Man. Mm-hmm. Captain Marvel is the origin of Captain Marvel. As far as like the origin movies, how would you rank this just between those movies?
To introduce a character, because see, the problem is like with Cap and Iron Man, I personally kind of had an idea, you know, and I was just like, all right, well, what direction are you going to take me on this ride?
Well, but then that also gives you the perspective. You don't know much about this character.
About Shang-Chi yet.
Yeah, but then what? Based on what you got, were you able to get enough to satisfy you?
No.
Satisfy, yeah, but I think there's more. I honestly think there's more.
I think, for now,
I'm cool with it, but yeah, you better give me more a little bit later. I better hear another.
Well, it's pretty clear they have plans with these characters, so yeah, this isn't the last time we see them.
Definitely.
No, I still want to. I want more. I mean, I understand his background, his childhood. Mm-hmm. I understand that piece, but now I want to understand why Shang-Chi is Shang-Chi.
Okay,
I want to know more of that. Yeah. Remember they sent him on that mission and he's like, and I never went home. I stayed in San Francisco. Yeah. I wish I knew. I'm like, what was that mission?
Well, I believe he was supposed to kill. He was going to kill. His assignment was to kill somebody. Oh, geez. Somebody's writing on the comments right now. Yeah. Somebody's writing down the comments. I know the assignment was a revenge. I think it was a revenge assignment.
Okay.
It was one of the people involved with his mother's death or something like that. It was something to that extent. Okay. Correct. Somebody's going to write it, which is great. That's what we love to hear from you folks out there. Being that I just said that, that was our show on Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings. Kind of crash trained it there, but that's Josh.
Crash it like a muni that we can't call it a muni.
Yeah, we can't call it. It was an SFT. San Francisco Transit. So they didn't even do AC turns. Anyways. With that being said, that's Jocelyn. He's Marvin. I'm Luke P. Thanks for watching and listening. Stick around. You know we're going to come up with some new material for you guys later on. So we appreciate you guys coming on and listening to us here. And until next time, rest in peace, DJ GOC. Take care.